You're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces. We just heard the opening section of the Stabat Mater of Giovanni Battista Pergolesi, an early 18th century composer, and this weekend there's a concert of the Stabat Mater. I am delighted to welcome into our studios Ana Maria Quintero and Jesse O'Hara. They're both graduate students here at New Mexico State University in violin, students of Simon Goyo. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
And I want to talk about Pergolesi, but you have just started a new music ensemble here in Las Cruces, Vox Valis Women's Ensemble. So that's what's going to be premiering this Sunday, your debut concert. Congratulations on a new venture in the community. How did you decide to start a new ensemble and make it just women? And then we'll get to Pergolesi in a few minutes.
Yes. Well, I'm Ana Maria. I'm the artistic director of the Vox Valis Women's Ensemble. I think the idea came because we are surrounded by men professionally here in MSU. It's not exclusive, but I think a little woman empowering for music wouldn't be a bad idea for Las Cruces. And yes, it's an idea that just came to me. And the piece I chose, because it's a piece I've been playing for the last 10 years in several settings. Yes, the first time I played it, I was 15 in a big string orchestra. And then I had the pleasure to work with Maestro Gorka Sierra. This is a Spanish organ player and choir director. And then I had the enormous pleasure to work with the musicians of the Concerto Italiano and Maestro Rinaldo Alessandrini, one of the biggest names in Baroque music. And that's all of those experiences kind of inspired me to bring that, some of my background to Las Cruces.
Wonderful. Well, we'll talk about the piece in just a moment. I just want to bring Jesse into this also. Jesse, Ana Maria is from Bogota, Colombia. Jesse's from here in Las Cruces. I should say that this women's ensemble is quite small, and the forces needed for the Stabat Mater of Pergolesi, even though it's a huge work, it's quite intimate, actually. So you've just got basically a string quartet and bass continuo and two singers. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes. And so part of my role with this ensemble as sort of a manager has been to gather professional female musicians in Las Cruces, since I am from here. And I knew that we had a lot of really amazingly talented, hardworking women who maybe hadn't been able to showcase their abilities in this kind of setting before. And so with such a small group, you have to make sure everyone's really like at the top of their game. And
yeah.
I think we're really, really lucky to be working with the women that we are, especially because everything we've done up to this point has been entirely voluntary. These are just women who really believed in this project and wanted to be a part of it. As we go on to future concerts, the group will change. Ana Maria and I are sort of the core, and we'd like to consistently have some vocalists involved with our projects. But that's sort of the idea, that it's going to grow, change, shrink, just suitable to whatever musical ideas come first.
Coming from a different generation of feminists, it was very common in my youth for women's ensembles to be popping up here and there because, as you say, Ana Maria, the classical music world and the music world in general was so dominated by men. And it was, you know, in those days, you could see a symphony orchestra with not a single woman involved. And things have gotten better.
Definitely.
I have to say.
Definitely.
That's no longer the case. And you being here is a testament to that. So let's talk a little bit about Pergolesi. We think of him as an old composer because it was 300 years ago that he lived, but he died very young. He was 26, and he left behind, he was an opera composer and very famous for a number of operas, but this is his work that most people associate with Pergolesi, is this Stabat Mater, which is a hymn to Mary. Mm-hmm. And it's gorgeous, and it just requires the string quartet, the bass continuo, which I guess is going to be organ with Janet Lohman,
yeah,
retired now, a professor from here at New Mexico State, and you've got as you said, two vocalists, of course, a vocal work. So Terry Gilbert and Krista Fredrickson. So those are your forces that are going to be performing. I should just say also the concert is this Sunday at 3 at First Presbyterian Church. And the singers have different parts where they're solos and the musicians. How long has it taken to pull the production together, rehearsal-wise and preparation? Ana Maria.
Well, I think so far everything has been really easy. Not easy because the music is quite complex, but everyone's so professional that we have gotten a lot of work done in a little time, I think. I think this idea hasn't been developed more than a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But we've worked really intensively in that month. And it's some of the beauty of Baroque music that I wanted to bring into the artistic doing of the ensemble is that we work really detailed, note by note. It's a piece that I fortunately know very well. So I really enjoyed working really profoundly in every number. But it hasn't taken long, surprisingly, because I mean, it's a huge piece, but everyone's so professional, and the ladies are amazing. So, yeah, it's going to be a great concert.
Okay, First Presbyterian, how did you make the connection to go there?
So, when I started reaching out to some musicians, and I was like, we need a really great continuo player. And originally, we were hoping for harpsichord, and I thought, well, Dr. Lohman is one of the few people I know in this area who's a really excellent keyboardist and who might be available to do this since she's retired. And so I reached out to her, and she was thrilled at the idea of playing with us, and she actually asked us to do it there. That's the church that she attends and is deeply involved in, and is an organist there at times. And she said, we just had the church renovated and the organ sounds fantastic and the acoustics are so much better because they took out all the carpet. And it's a really beautiful church and the sound is really great. And what I really like about it actually is that there are going to be people kind of almost all the way around us. And so it lends itself really well to this particularly intimate setting of the Stabat Mater that we've chosen to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's listen to just a short snippet from one of the sections, and then we can talk a little bit about how this music is made. We're going to be listening to Lucy Crowe and Tim Mead, who's a countertenor in this performance with La Nuova Musica under the direction of David Bates. Just a few seconds of section 8 from Stabat Mater by Pergolesi. It's such beautiful music and timeless. What is it like for you as the performers to be playing it? What's happening to you when you're in that midst of that music?
Yeah, it's for sure a really interesting piece. And, you know, Pergolesi, as he was considered kind of a bridge between Baroque and classical music, but this particular music is really Baroque still, except for the format. They use that the fact that he used like the string quartet, and the way he uses the textures is pretty much closer to classic, but the core of the music is really Baroque, as we just listened actually in the fugue. That is one of like the milestone of Baroque music, right? Yeah. So yeah, for me it's just inspiring. Every note is sublime. I just love this piece so terribly. And musically, it's really interesting to see everything connect. And in such an intimate setting that we have, it's easy to recognize everything that he wrote and enjoy it as not as the player, as the violinist, but as the music that is in the middle of everything. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly. Yeah. And I think that some of these movements particularly make very clear the communication that he writes between, like, the lower voices and the organ. We have Elizabeth Green, viola, and Aaron Espinosa on cello. And the depth that he is able to pull out of so few instruments, I think, is part of that incredible bridge to the classical era style of writing. Mm-hmm. It's really a wonderful opportunity, definitely.
The words, it's a hymn to Mary. Are they going to be available for people in some sort of translation?
Yes, of course. We're going to have a program printed out with the original text in Latin and a great translation we found in English that kind of preserves the lyricism to it, like
the poetic nature
the
of
poetic
it.
The poetic nature.
Certainly.
So, yeah, of course, you're going to be able to understand everything. It's a really powerful lyric, and actually as a fun, not so fun fact. This is the last piece Pergolesi wrote. Yeah. And he practically wrote it in his deathbed. He finished it and the next day he was agonizing. Mm. So it's a really deep piece, also like kind of Mozart's Requiem. It has that mysticism of a composer seeing that so close and writing about it. So it's a really interesting experience to listen to the piece. So,
and he was 26 years old. He died of tuberculosis. Yeah, one of the things that one has to remember, consciously remember, is that before the age of antibiotics, death was at hand for everywhere. And so people, you know, Mozart, of course, died very young also, little bit older than Pergolesi, but still they were, Bach lost half of his children in infancy or childhood. Of course, he had a lot of children, but very few lived to beyond even teenage years. So that sense of the fragility of life and being part of some greater something eternal, through music, I think it was just palpable. It must have been palpable in the society. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it'll be really important to have the poetry available because each movement really sort of discusses another part of Mary's suffering, which of course maybe mirrors a lot of the things that were going on around him at the time. Even though some of the movements don't musically feel, don't give you this sense of suffering, there's some things that are seemingly very peppy.
Yeah.
But they're not, if you understand the translated words. So
they are not. Yes. Pergolesi, this particular work, actually I associated with the Doctrine of Affections, that is kind of a dictionary of rhetorical figures of Baroque theorists and how they analyzed how musical emotions are translated into music.
The Doctrine of Affections?
Yes, the Doctrine of Affections. Uh-huh. So if you really look closely, a lot of things that Pergolesi does, even though they may sound peppy and happy for us, are technically not that. For example, the major keys he uses where it had a really, really negative connotation in the Baroque time. For now, like, as classicism and music evolved, we don't feel it like that. But in Baroque, it was a whole different way to analyze music and to write it as such. So it's really interesting.
That is fascinating because we sort of think of emotions and things that get evoked as being timeless and universal. So that's really interesting that, like, colors have different associations in different cultures, right? Sometimes it's good luck, sometimes it's bad luck. So I don't know about this Doctrine of the Affections. I'm going to have to look that up. That sounds very fascinating.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You may want to start by Johannes Matteson. He was considered the father of the Doctrine of Affections. But it's a work that really many Baroque theorists carried through. And yeah, it's really impressive how they were the pioneers of us understanding how, I don't know, like descending chromatism sounds sad. But why? It's because they did it, because they associated it, and Baroque composers wrote it. And it's kind of there in our musical memory that until this day we understand
we have that.
And we don't even think about it, but all the work was right around there. And mm-hmm. Pergolesi uses it very much. Every movement has a hint of the doctrine of the rhetorical figures. Hmm. And is key to understanding the music.
And not just associated with feelings, of course, but also their concept of this doctrine of affections was that it caused a true physiological, psychological change in the listener, mm-hmm. Which, again, could be more of the mysticism surrounding Pergolesi's death.
Well, and at that time, not just with musicians, but poets, writers, there was also the sense that you were connecting with, there was a harmony
yes.
in the mm-hmm. heavens and the spheres, that the whole of creation was somehow connected with music that was heavenly music. So,
yes.
Yeah, you're connecting with that too, something bigger that way.
It's very profound music.
Yeah. My guests have been Jesse O'Hara and Ana Maria Quintero, the founders of Vox Valis Women's Ensemble. The debut concert is this Sunday. We should mention Krista Fredrickson and
Terry K. Gilbert,
both local singers. You want to say just a word about them? They'll be the soloists, the vocal soloists?
Yes. So Terry K. Gilbert is the founder of the Mesilla Valley Teen Singers, and she's been an active musician, vocalist, and educator for many years in our community. Krista Fredrickson is a recent graduate of New Mexico State University with her master's in conducting. She teaches at Centennial High School, and she also has been involved with opera, musical theater productions, the Santa Fe Opera Children's Workshop, a number of really, really excellent things. Elizabeth Green is our violist. She is an undergraduate student here, very accomplished. And Erin Espinosa is a really, really well-educated, talented musician and teacher. I think it's also just really excellent that we have so many educator artists in our ensemble this time.
And cross-generational.
Yes.
Which is also really nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the concert's at 3 on Sunday. It's by donation. It's at the First Presbyterian Church. Stabat Mater of Pergolesi and the Vox Valis Women's Ensemble. Thank you so much to both of you for coming in.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
Good luck with the concert.
Thank you.